Kopcak, Assistant Commissioner for Land Use Management. And we are here today to start the conversation about development of a public access rule that's reflective of the new law that was signed we are breaking into different stakeholder sessions with the different interested groups. And then eventually we will come back together again with our potential language that we want to put out in a proposal. Today's stakeholder session will be recorded, and that recording will be put on the department's website. But before we get started, I would like to maybe go around the room and each person perhaps say their name, where they're from.
Colleen Keller, DEP Land Use.
Diane Down, the Director of Division of Land Use Regulation.
Joanne Davis, Land Use.
Good afternoon. I'm Mike Hsu, and I'm a Deputy Attorney General on behalf of DEP.
Hi, Tom Churchill, New Jersey Utilities Association.
Ed Kelly, Maritime Association, Port of New York, New Jersey.
Carrie Kirklow, Director of Local Government Assistance, DEP.
Jill Aspinall, Office of Policy and Coastal Management.
Dan Kennedy with the Utility and Transportation Contractors Association of New Jersey.
Allison McLeod, I'm a Program Manager in DEP's Government Relations.
Steve Dalton with the law firm of Giordano, Haller, and Cecilip for the New Jersey Builders Association.
Mike Eggington, New Jersey State Chamber of Commerce.
Ed Waters, the Chemistry Council of New Jersey.
Melissa Danko, New Jersey Green Trees.
Ray Canton, New Jersey Business and Industry Association.
Jennifer Lesniak, I'm with the Office of Policy and Coastal Management.
And Kim Springer, I'm with the Office of Policy and Coastal Management.
We put together a presentation for today, and I think I'm going to quickly run through this, try to walk through what our plans are. So we are beginning the stakeholder meetings. You were actually our first official start of the stakeholder process. We are having these meetings this summer, and then our goal is to have a proposal out the winter of 2020 with an adoption the winter of 2021. That timeline is consistent with the legislation that it gave us 18 months to adopt regulations, more specifically with respect to continuing the use of our permit by rules or general permits by certification and our general permits. That's really pretty much driving our timeline. Goals of the rule would be to incorporate the new law and redefine what public access means. You may all recognize the law inserted some additional amenities that could be viewed as public access, such as parking and restrooms. Add public access restrictions into the law. The law had some outs with respect to, let's say, for example, Homeland Security. Provide standards when public access is required. The law is pretty clear that when there's a change in footprint, public access is required. Examine all permits by rule, general permits by cert, and general permits. Add criteria for public access for marinas as written in the legislation. Public access includes visual, physical access to and use of tidal waters and their shores, includes sufficient perpendicular access, and then necessary support amenities. I think it's the support amenities that I think a lot of our conversations will be centered around with the different groups. So, for example, I think municipalities are very interested in the third bullet there, probably more so than
yeah, the League of Municipalities. I was going to say Mike Sarah, mm-hmm. your point of contact there.
Mm-hmm. It's okay. We just started.
I'm sorry.
So, as I mentioned, the law says that public access examination is needed when there's a change in the existing footprint of a structure, a change in the use of the property, and when beach replenishment or beach and dune maintenance is occurring on a property. that's when the department is required to do something. The rules will ideally guide us on what that thing is that we require, what that examination looks like. Today, what I really want to get out of everybody is what's the absolute, what must be added to the rules as far as you're concerned, and what must be removed from the existing set of rules that you think it was unworkable, or perhaps what you don't want to see added to the rules. Maybe that's a better question for some of you. The goal here is really to get at what those absolutes are, to make sure we're mindful of them when we're scripting, and to see if there's any common ground with some of the other stakeholder groups with respect to some of these absolutes. Obviously, the legislation is going to be our main guide, along with our administrative history and the implementation of the law. Flood hazard is our newer issue. You know, we don't have public access requirements in our flood hazard rules, and this legislation brought in flood hazard into that equation when we didn't have that before. We try to think of a situation where it wouldn't already be covered by the CAFR permit. When it wouldn't be already required by the CAFR permit, when flood hazard would be standalone, and we came up with, there are situations where a flood hazard permit could be the guide in the Meadowlands. The upland development that could only require a flood hazard approval because upland waterfront doesn't exist in the Meadowlands. We only have jurisdiction below the mean high water line.
And its title.
Mm-hmm. And its title could be a circumstance where public access, where we normally would only be looking at it for the work in the water. If there's no work in the water and it's only in the upland, we may actually apply a standard. Otherwise, for the most part, if you're crossing a tidal waterway, you're already receiving a waterfront or building adjacent to it or a CAFR permit. But they still could exist. So there are certain things that we also think that we need to talk about and want to make sure we get out of each session. In our journey back in 2006 to 2010, seems like for the most part, Hudson River waterfront area, everyone wanted to make sure that that still remained the same, the walkway being a priority where the walkway didn't currently exist. Want to test everyone's temperature if that's still the case here. Beach and dunes, this is a pretty hot topic, and certain waterways. So we were in 2006 rule, there was for single family homeowners, there wasn't a requirement to provide public access unless it was on a beach or dune, and certain waterways where there perhaps was a significant water body that maybe people wanted to gain access to. We want to ask people those questions if there's still interest in retaining or adding that kind of criteria. The types of projects require a review of public access. We're hopeful out of these discussions we can get a list of maybe projects that people still think should not require public access, such as I'm replacing a bulkhead and I'm only bumping it out 18 inches. Is that a change in a footprint as required under the legislation? We want to get feedback on that. And what types of projects do not require review of public access as well. Once again, are there certain things that you think that should always require it? Are there other things that you're hopeful that we incorporate won't require an individual public access examination? These are just questions that we're kind of trying to come up with. scale the change to the footprint of the use. So as you know, the existing rules, we have 50% change in the footprint. Doesn't require public access. That's not the case now. The law is like a change in the footprint. So is there some level or threshold where a change or a shift in the footprint is it reasonable to do a full examination of public access at that location? And the demands for public access in an area, should we have some kind of specifics on the number of restrooms, parking, the amount of parking, ample access to the shoreline every half mile, every quarter mile, that statistic of whether or not we need to add more points, whether we need to make it mandatory, you need to always provide so many parking spaces, you need to provide restrooms. And then other topics for discussion is on-site versus off-site. Maybe you can't do it on-site, but perhaps you can do it off-site. And then timing restrictions related to if you do provide on-site public access, would you want to, us to incorporate some flexibility in the timing? How do you know if you have sufficient access? That's a question that we're going to be wrestling through in the next month and a half to come up with some standards based on the law. And as you probably all know, the law's pretty open as to what is appropriate and sufficient. It doesn't go into any detail what that is, except for marinas and Homeland Security and the exceptions. Those are definitely clear. After that, we're here to talk through those issues. And then we're going to go into details. So I'm going to start off by maybe asking each of you, what are your absolutes? Like, what do you want to definitely see or want us to address? Maybe not include? As I said, we are really looking across the like we started in the Orange Book examination of what was public access all the way to the latest rule, and then adding in the legislation of what worked, what didn't work, what, you know, spurred legislative, what has spurred an appeal, what in this case resulted in legislation, to try to see if we think we're going to hit it right. But we want to hear from everyone in this space of your feelings. And I'm going to point to Ray first.
How much time do I have?
You have 3 minutes.
Well, yeah, I feel like I'm a GPU now.
Yeah, no, you have time. Because I really want to get your thoughts. You've been on this journey a long time with us for a good portion of it, and then prior to that.
I just want to contextualize what I think the legislature did and where you guys need to be or could be. First of all, now, the legislation, as you said, except for some specifics, was fairly general in codifying the public trust doctrine, you know, as they saw it, maybe making a little bit more emphasis on some certain, you know, aspects of the public trust doctrine. But they generally didn't change the paradigm as to how public access is provided, and didn't mandate that your program do certain things other than those few specifics. So I would start by urging you not to go down roads which is going to make the program unworkable or to try to do things that are not possible. I would say you should do the minimum you need to do to, you know, implement the legislation. You're still left with a paradigm where, from a private sector perspective, it's only when you come in for a permit that anything happens. So you're not solving the world, you know, on a permit by permit basis. Even MPAPs are still not mandated. The towns must do their municipal public access, I've got what terminology is used in the municipal land use law, but that doesn't necessarily mean they have to apply for public, for MPAP. So again, there's some of those mandates are not there. Maybe you get them through the dune and beach maintenance part. But it's really through the MPAP process where I think you're going to get more of your general benefits of parking and restrooms, et cetera. I would advise you, or I would ask you, not to try to make the guy who's coming in and putting in a concession or a restaurant to try to provide for the public access for the community. That's not, that person's responsibility. So don't fall into those holes. If you have some discretion about how you handle building expansions, if it's just shifts or it's de minimis, I would try to avoid opening up the whole public access type of requirements for those really minimal types of projects.
Can you give me examples of what your organization would consider minimal?
The law talks about expanding building footprints. If it's a shift, one place to another place, that's not an expansion of a footprint. That's a shift. Again, I really didn't think about that. I wasn't sure how much discretion you think you have, in that. But if you can make a determination of you mentioned 20x20 or 50x50, if you have discretion, I would give yourself the discretion. More importantly, I think, and we've talked about this before when the legislation was pending, is the issue of permit by rules, general permits, and permits by certification. I think largely, other than maybe the issue of beach and dune maintenance, where I think the legislature is giving you some direction, I think the department is in the right direction how it treats all of those. Right now, permit by rules and general permits by certification, I think without exception, do not require any public access implementation. I think you should continue that. The idea of having permit by rules and general permits by certification is to allow for the expeditious processing of minor types of activities. You should do nothing that's going to interfere with those types of activities. And then on the general permits, I have them all listed. I think you probably know them as well. About half of them, or thereabouts, maybe more than half, require some type of public access requirement. The other half do not. I would argue that the half that do not probably still don't need public access requirements. And the half or so that do require it, maybe those are the ones you continue to require it as you do now. I think some of you even have it built in, like amusement piers, but not do that individual site-by-site, type of analysis. The analysis that the legislature tells you to do is basically the Matthews test, but if you should not bog your program down in trying to do the impossible or too much. If you still push the MPAPs and MPAPs in place, and the town's generally consistent with what they're doing, then you have your answer. You really don't need much. You've already looked at it, you've already approved it, the town's already done the work. Again, the general ask is don't do things that are going to make the burden too great on the regulated community and it's going to make it too great on your program to review. So, again, I'm not sure if I helped you with specifics, but again, largely I think you guys are doing it right now. Maybe you need a little bit more authority to require the towns to do some of the MPAPs. You've got that authority right now. But I would not throw the proverbial baby out with the bathwater and bog your program down, trying to make those type of improvements or changes.
Melissa? I'm going to guess you're going to say follow the legislation. Don't sway from it whatsoever.
Unless you're going to sway.
Don't say anything different than what's in there, which of course we wouldn't do.
No, I mean, obviously,
do you want anything? Do you think we should add anything more?
I mean, at a minimum, yes, we would like to see these protections remain in there for marinas.
Right.
We were involved
for a long time, obviously the rules before and then the rules after, which we primarily supported. You know, I think, and again, I don't think this is something that you're going to do, but since you're asking, I will just throw it on the table. The one piece that we were left with was the deed restriction for any of the public access that was required. It's still sort of a painful piece of this for our marina owners. But again, when you deal with reasonable access where they can sort of identify the areas where they can provide meaningful access on their properties, that was something that we continued to support. Pieces that we struggled with was, you know, requiring full access across the entire waterfront, which became, you know, logistically challenging for our marinas, seasonal, because, you know, they store boats and things like that. So I think this, we were able to live with some of this. We certainly wouldn't want to see it be any more restrictive or required. We don't have the water section has. And the deed restriction was the last piece that we've been
deed restriction,
yeah.
So you were
struggling with her since the very, very beginning.
And can you maybe give me a little bit more information on the concern there with the public access deed restriction for the marina owners? I don't want to put you on the spot, but like, is there a situation that you can remember where it
not so much when
we can put it in perspective.
I don't have a whole handful of projects, you know, in the, you know, through the rules, you know, as they were, you know, as written in the legislation. Prior to this, the deed restriction piece was incredibly challenging. So there were a handful of marinas going way back, maybe 10 years or so, that had to do some dredging projects, and they had no choice. They had to move forward, so they had to deed restrict their entire waterfront. I think it becomes an issue in terms of whether they change use or they sell, and they have that restriction on there. That was one of the biggest.
It affects the value of their
estate.
Affects
the value, affects what can be done with the property and the site. So. And, you know, from a property owner's perspective, property rights, you know, they feel that they're giving that up when it comes to a restriction like that, that they no longer have any control over the property that they own. Mm-hmm. Flexibility for us is really the biggest piece in here, because there's so many different marinas that are located all over the state, big, small, configured differently. And this is why, you know, for us, one size fits all is really impossible for these facilities to be able to go in for permits and be able to provide this access. So the flexibility piece is something that we would continue to make sure is still available for these properties that are doing significant expansion. So if they are expanding significantly and they have the ability to provide access in certain pieces, that flexibility is what's incredibly important for these businesses.
We're covered mostly under the exemptions for homeland security, but our biggest concerns cover the off-site access piece of it. And we want to make sure that, you know, a lot of times our companies will upgrade equipment, which could change the footprint and component of that, changing the footprint for energy efficiency or environmental issues to try to reduce their environmental footprint. And there's a disincentive for them to do that if they have to provide off-site access. So maybe a way to try to further define any type of change in footprint to not include, you know, equipment or processes that are changed as part of the footprint to make sure that there's no disincentive for folks not to do the right thing. That's always been, I think, our big concern, as many of us, is the off-site access piece, being that we're Homeland Security. We're kind of put, we're pigeonholed, but we can't offer it, and we feel like we're being punished and have to provide the off-site piece, which many times municipalities don't have a formula for which to offer what we should offer. So that's a big piece for us, but ways to try to pigeonhole that off-site access into what exactly it means for the
Are you working with the Office of Homeland Security on that and the rules that they need as part of this legislation to ensure that your companies fall into that category?
I'll make sure Elvin and our office handles that. I'll make sure.
Okay. Yeah, because that we're going to be pointing to that, but if there is no rules in place, you know.
listed in the legislation, didn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, the legislation says that they will adopt, they'll need to adopt the rules.
That was a provision, Ginger, that a lot of us, a number of the trade groups collectively talked to Senator Smith about what our major concern was with the critical infrastructure, making sure those laws were, in the final piece of legislation. Mm-hmm. My example would be, because we share some of the same members, that somebody couldn't go through Bayway Refinery to get to the Arthur Kill, that's considered, critical infrastructure, or somebody can't canoe down in Salem next to the PSCG nuclear power plant, that there's certain areas that are, logically you would say off limits, but you have to be pretty clear, I think, as you're defining that. I would like to see that, sort of emphasized in whatever final regulatory document you put out, to be very clear that, that was, it was always the intent of the chairman to have, I was one of the co-chairs, by the way, of the task force that he put together. He knew that we weren't going to get consensus with everyone. We had a number of stakeholder meetings where there were at least, 80-plus people in those meetings.
I wasn't invited.
Oh, all right. You were in a different capacity. That's right.
Yes, there were.
Yeah, your predecessor was there. But in any event, we ended up presenting the chairman with a close to what we thought consensus document was. Whereas in his words, this was supposed to be the easy bill. The hard bill was a little bit what Ed alluded to, were the things that we agreed to disagree on. And there were some issues, I guess, I won't speak for the builders, that they'll bring up. I know the League of Municipalities had concerns with who's going to pay for the, parking and bathroom facilities. If municipalities do property taxes, go up. So, I'll leave that to when you meet with them. But it was always the intent of the chairman, from what I understand, to do this in two phases. The second phase bill, whenever he gets around to it, would be the more controversial stuff that we, couldn't agree on. The off-site, like if you're a company and you can't provide the access, are you then required to provide it somewhere else? Especially when you're looking more, dare I say, even like North Jersey, where it's heavy industrialized compared to, I guess, the farther south that you go. I would like to see just some emphasis on, the critical infrastructure, that people recognize that there are certain areas that, that you really can't, provide the access to. And anything that's considered, again, logically dangerous. I know there was a gentleman, he was talking about crossing over some railroad tracks to get to some waterway. I mean, again, all of us look at each other, that's common sense, but I think something has to be spelled out to really define that, to make sure that we're not putting people in danger, but you're also not putting on alert any of these facilities.
Okay. So you would like us to see, to address the critical infrastructure that's out there and not allow access to it?
Well, I think you have to be clear about, again, there was always an understanding, and actually, in the end, that amendment that we had put in on critical infrastructure, my colleagues who were co-chairs, I think Debbie Mance was on there at the time, along with Tim Dillingham, had agreed. They were fine with the changes that, because they understood that there were certain areas of the state that just were not deemed public access to a certain waterway or what have you, because again they were next to something that was deemed under the laws that we had spelled out in the legislation. I know you guys can chime in.
As an example, federal law prohibits public access to the facilities, whether physically or even we're supposed to provide opaque fencing to obscure the view. It also has regulations about out into the waterway, which is secured under Coast Guard. So for the Maritime Transportation Security Act, that's very important to us, because federal law actually prohibits that. So we would also like to be exempted from providing alternative off-site because it just doesn't work for us. The other thing that we'd like to take a look at is, you know, any type of revision or a look back, and we would like to exempt routine maintenance or upgrades. As you mentioned, the repairing bulkheads is obviously an essential part of our business. The Jersey law currently for in-kind in place stipulates an 18-inch variance. We think that's virtually insignificant against several hundred-acre terminals. It gets kind of silly. 18 inches is just what the requirement is to do that work. So those are our two key issues that we are under the umbrella, as the legislation does state, that exempts us because of the federal preclusion. And as far as any reevaluation of change in footprint, we'd like to exempt routine maintenance or construction permits, because they generally are limited to 18-inch expansion into the waterway already. And we think that's just an insignificant change in footprint that we'd want to trigger a huge administrative operation of reevaluating a footprint or availability. The only other thing that's in here, I don't know if there's any play in the word existing structure or facility. Yeah, so that's out.
Yeah.
So, you know, because in future situations, iterations, it is possible that a shoreline facility could be activated for an operational purpose that would then cause it to fall under the federal security plans. So we want to make sure that that's okay, too. We don't want to cripple any future applicability, which the flip side to that is if any marine facility is inactivated, it would lose its protection under that lack of a current facility security plan. So I think that's just logical. It was the only reason we're seeking the exemption is because the facility security plan required under Maritime Transportation Security Act is the item that actually precludes public access.
And Ginger, there was a task force of us, a subcommittee, if you will, that explained a lot of this to the chairman at the time when he was drafting the legislation.
And he was amenable to that.
This was all understood and agreed upon. So what we're conveying here now is not different than what we talked to Chairman Smith about.
And he was amenable to that.
Yeah,
he understood
the
concept.
That's why that was probably one of the few changes he made in the legislation, because he understood the logic of it, but sometimes things are not logical in Trenton, so you have to kind of spell it out. So,
do you believe he agreed that you shouldn't have to provide offsite as well?
I was always to the understanding again that he felt that was going to be addressed in separate legislation. He always saw a part two to this. He said to me from day one, "Give me a bill that." You can, Michael, you're one of the co-chairs along with the three others, that we can try to build some consensus on. This was a little hard as well. We thought it would be easier than said and done, but in the end, he understood that controversial stuff, like the, you know, providing off-site, if you can't provide it there at your facility, was something that would be discussed, dialogued, and debated in the second round of another public access bill. So we were always to the understanding that was going to be addressed in the future and not through this legislation. But again, I don't want to put words in his mouth. I know he knew that was one of the things. We had a report that we did submit to the chairman, and I believe it is accessible. And if you need it, I have electronic copies of it that discussed it in length, and that we could not, in the 80 stakeholder meeting, come to any consensus, you know, with that, so we kind of tabled it to the next go round.
I don't want to put you on the spot again, but I heard two different things from you. Do you believe it was the senator's position that he was in agreement that when he listed those exemptions, that off-site public access was not on the table? He wasn't going to require that.
In my opinion, from what I, mm-hmm. my conversations with him, yes.
Okay, I just want to make sure.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You concur?
That was our feeling as well.
That was your own question as well.
Yes, and that it would be addressed if necessary at a future time.
Yeah.
And follow on.
If you read the language, it could have easily said that it does not say an off-site access will be required. It doesn't mandate that it be there.
But again, Ginger, last thing, and I didn't mean to skip over you guys, sorry, just because they were part of that subcommittee. I could provide you any of the materials that I had as a co-chair when we were putting the report together for the center.
Too loud and clear about replacement of a bulkhead,
yep.
Change of equipment on a site. So basically the facility is the same facility. It just, you have to do things within that facility to maintain your operation.
Right.
And we believe under that umbrella, it should not trigger a need for additional access. Is there a particular permit by rule, general permit by cert, or general permit that your organization uses to do that maintenance work? Now think about flood hazard as well when answering that question, that we are going to have to do an examination of why we don't think that you need to do an individual public access assessment, and therefore it still should remain a permit by rule. Think about those as well.
Just to follow up, though, again, my point is well, I'm on the GHP, obviously, I'm not sure about what has with GHP.
I just want to make sure that there's already the
ball set. Again, it's just a routine maintenance, easy in, easy out type of process. It's not changing the use, it's not changing the activities, it's not interfering with the public's right of access in any manner. Those are the exact type of things that, you know, shouldn't need to provide public access. And it doesn't have the existing rules right now.
Should be.
Because of the expansion language and other things. Now, the legislature changed that, but it did give you the ability to put back in this language, you know, or this exemption into the GPs. So you have that authority.
Following up on that, Ginger, I think that the current regs exempt single-family homes on a GP basis from public access requirements. And for the Builders Association, we believe that GP exemption should be maintained. But beyond that, so you've mentioned it, Ray's mentioned it, and we agree. The law is very limited. And so what we'd like to see in the regs are not wholesale changes from what are in the coastal regs now, but some clarification in terms of the limitations of the law. So, for example, the law speaks to requiring public access consistent with the public trust doctrine. That doesn't mean that with every permit decision, the department is required to impose a condition for public access. You've alluded to the individualized determinations. What we think the law requires is you look at the facts of each application and each property that's involved and make a determination of, under the public trust doctrine, the 200 years plus of case law in the state, and then the case law preceding that the state case law interpreted, going back to Roman times, whether or not public access is required. And the cases have, someone mentioned Matthews, that's obviously the seminal case for public access requirements for on when private property will be burdened. So that case spells out the types of facts that you need to look at in each instance and make a determination of whether public access is required here. And the law itself includes some of those factors and creates a threshold determination of the department looking at what's the existing available public access at the outset. So you may make on an application a determination at the outset on a threshold basis, well, there's sufficient public access already. I don't even have to get into the fact-specific analysis for that property as to whether or not it would be reasonable and reasonably necessary to burden that property with public access rights. So, you know, you had a slide earlier about requiring public access, so I just wanted to make it clear, and hopefully it will be clarified in the regs, that it's not a, the law isn't a mandate that public access be imposed as a condition in whenever a permit's issued, even for an individual permit. That's not what the law says. It says you're required to evaluate public access consistent with the public trust doctrine, and there's a whole history of case law that has to be looked at in that
so
context.
So it's what you're getting at is that the law is very, its intent is about overall accessibility. It doesn't require at every point access.
Right.
You're getting at, you want to be able to do a broader examination than at that site.
Well, I think the examination may be narrow. I think it may be property specific, but in that context, yes, you have to look at the broader picture of where else is access available. If I've got an application for a property on a street end or abutting a street that perpendicularly provides access to the beach, well, then there's existing public access. I shouldn't, as the private property owner, I mean, that's not the best example because that's a single family home theoretically, but let's assume it was, you know, a permit for three homes, they own three lots. There's already access along that street to the beach, and so under the law, I don't believe access would be required. I don't think private property rights should be burdened in that instance. And what this law does is says, good or bad, for the department's sake, I mean, to Ray's point, I think it adds a little work for the department on specific applications, but it requires you to look at what's reasonably necessary and implement the case law under the public trust doctrine. So that would be for the Builders Association, that would be our, you know, biggest concern in terms of clarification of the law, that it not be a mandate in every instance and on every permit application that there will be a condition requiring public access. There may be instances where it's not necessary. I mentioned the single family home exemption. We do believe that should be maintained. Certainly that was carried through in the 2017 rules that were readopted by the department, and those rules were readopted post-Hackensack Riverkeeper decision and based on the legislature's mandate to adopt rules consistent with the public trust doctrine. So from our position, those rules and that exception has already been vetted and determined to be consistent with the public trust doctrine. So we don't think that should be changed. In terms of the footprint change issue and certain things that you might want to consider, from our perspective, you know, there are GPs, permits by rules, where you can enhance the footprint on the non-waterboard side of an existing dwelling. So we would like to see an exception for a requirement for public access conditions in those types of situations where you're doing a non-waterward expansion of the footprint, because we don't believe that would impede or affect public access. And this is more of a Steve Dalton proposal than necessarily a builder's, so be it as it may. You know, I've been involved with Joanna and Mike on certain applications in the past where you wind up dedicating some amount of funds, you know, for a municipal public access project or a public access project. And that's been very helpful at times to allow staff to find a way for an applicant to meet and applicants to meet the rule. It's not always that easy to find an off-site public access project and go buy land somewhere. Everyone thinks it's that very easy to go buy an easement or go buy a piece of land. It's not that easy. So I'd like to see the department have the authority, like the Shellfish Mitigation Fund, to have a fund where it can accept monies and use those monies toward, whether they be municipalities that have adopted public access plans, hopefully, and made that part of their master plan, or if not, then the department has some authority to utilize those monies on a collect, rather than a piecemeal $10,000 a year, whatever the number is.
You know, something like meaningful.
Yeah. Because I agree with Ray's point, you know, it shouldn't be a burden on individual owners to address municipal-related issues like, you know, regular restroom facilities, regular parking facilities. That I don't think this law, I don't think that was the intent of this law. I don't think this law does that specifically. But if the department had some ability to, through a mitigation type fund, collect monies, I think that would go a long way towards those types of issues.
My turn.
Hi.
Hey. I've got a lot of thoughts on this as a lifelong resident in New Jersey, but I'm going to keep my thoughts limited to my members' interests. So my members bid on work that's put out by public, primarily by public agencies. We work for the Army Corps, we work for the DOT, we work for the DEP, we work for local government. So I guess my first point was to make sure that as we're interested in vertical development, most of the kind of the folks around the, you know, the room here represent vertical private interests. I want to make sure that there's another room like this with the DOT, the Army Corps, Port Authority, mm-hmm. and others, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Because frankly, that's we want to make sure that they're not getting bogged down in design and permitting, because frankly, if they do, we're not going to have anything to bid on. Basically, utility contractors, transportation contractors will build what's spec'd, right? So we want to encourage the department to have a lot of conversation up front with the owners of these public infrastructure projects that will be put out to bid moving forward. Based on my previous life, I have to just say that be careful about requiring restrooms in areas that aren't in the sewer service area, wastewater management plans. Don't get cute with the definition of bathroom. What I think it means is a port-a-john. But so if you go past that, you're going to get really, it'll be really interesting in terms of pavilions and bathing houses, and you're going to get mixed up with other programs from the department. So perhaps think hard about that. You know, we all know that there's implications of running lines to areas that are at risk. And perhaps the department may want to think about that pretty carefully as it moves forward. Also, we don't think that projects such as dredging, and think about the projects the department wants to happen, for example, like CSOs. You know, CSOs come in for these permits. You know, you wouldn't want to hold up eliminating a combined sewer overflow in a place like Camden or Newark or Jersey City or wherever for public access. Frankly, that would probably be counterproductive to the department's overall mission to protect the environment. So
environmental projects.
Right.
You know, kind of like that umbrella.
Yeah, I think there should be some sort of thought to,
new water lines. To
right. And, you know, we're, you know, my mind goes
the topography. It's below surface most of the
time. Right. Some. But, again, I'm just talking big general ideas right here. I mean, in my mind, naturally goes to beaches and estuaries when it comes to public access. But, you know, I don't know how far this permitting will go into coastal lakes, river, you know, navigable rivers. And I think that's which become a little bit less likely to be have existing public access, and you're basically pioneering new public access along the Navisic River or something like that. So that's those are some things. Water supply reservoirs that have recreational aspects to it. You know, you gotta be really careful. That would probably fall under the homeland security aspects, but there's folks who probably would want to have more access around some of our water supply reservoirs, and there may be some good reasons for homeland security not to have public access unlimited to our primary drinking water reservoirs. But I'm glad to hear that you're working with these partners. I would say don't just work with DOT. Work with the entire breadth of the transportation agencies in the state, including New Jersey Transit. DOT, I think I've made this mistake in my career, assuming that DOT represents all of them, and they don't. So please don't make the mistakes I've made on that.
And if you ever need any help getting to those folks, we have built-in day-to-day relationships with those. We'd be glad to help get the right people at the table if you need any help.
As far as the maritime portion of it, yeah, I would agree if there's going to be a follow-on meeting to bring in the Corps and Port Authority, you know, to get any concerns with them. But the majority of the facilities are actually privately held. So that's important for us. And as I say, the maintenance of the Marine Transportation Security Act is essential to us. And as far as reevaluation for footprint, we'd like to try to find a minimal impact capability. Because the end result is, no matter what happens, any new additional footprint would also be covered by this federal policy. So it would kind of be an exercise in futility to reevaluate that. So, you know, we'd like to try to avoid just the paperwork and the reporting and going through the obligation of doing that, because at the end of the day, any expansion of that footprint would be covered by that facility security plan and would be exempted from this in any case.
Is it easy for myself to determine that you fall into that category? Like, let's say, for example, you're coming in for a permit to do just that, like the, I don't know, change some equipment around. How would I know
that we're covered by a facility security plan?
Yes.
U.S. Coast Guard maintains a list of all active. You can get that from them, and they're very specific as to what it covers, what the actual footprint is that covers.
Do they give you any kind of documentation that say you fall under that, or you just have to go onto that list?
No, we would have copies of that, of the validated facility security plan. So you could request it either from us directly or just the U.S. Coast Guard roster is publicly accessible. You could just go in and look for, or you can ask us either way.
Okay.
They're public documents.
Okay.
You can skip me. I'm with it.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't have much to add to what's been said. Just I can vouch for what Mike said regarding would appear to be Senator Smith's intent to address offsite mitigation through separate legislation. I don't remember where that was stated, but I do remember him discussing that, whether it was a stakeholder meeting or formally on the record.
Okay.
So that's my understanding as well. Also to clarify that, you know, I'm representing the distribution and transmission side of the utility sector, not the generation side. So I think I'm not representing those concerns, and those folks may be coming in another meeting, but I think our primary issues are covered under the Homeland Security regulations that will be promulgated. I would ask you what Homeland Security's plan is for the process, because I don't know if that's something that entity typically engages in. Promulgations of rules, so do they have the question that I had during the legislative process is whether they had the infrastructure to do that or what their process would be.
It is my understanding that nothing has been proposed.
Okay.
I'm not aware of anything. I just was wondering if there was going to be folks who want to make sure that list is, definitions are established, or are making sure that is happening.
Are you saying that if they don't do the regulations, then those facilities are not necessarily exempted under your regulations? You would need them to act for you?
I don't know how we determine. I think that's a question that we have, is how do we determine something falls into that category absent the regulations that the legislation says has to occur, right? I'm just assuming, since they put that in there, that there was somebody working on that.
So your advice to this table is to make sure it happens.
Great interest in making sure that happens. I mean, after that, I don't know what we're going to use.
But that is, as I understand, that only applies to the non-enumerated facilities, correct?
Correct. You're still fine. You're good.
Hey, Jim.
Chris Gulicks with PSE&G, here to represent the utility side for Opal. Same concerns as everybody voiced from Oregon, especially Tom. It's critical that we understand Homeland Security's exemptions. I read through the bill, and I guess the department can also come up with their own exemptions too, but it looked like it would be more on a case-by-case basis, the way the rule or the bill had read. And that, based on determination of safety and security, was listed in somewhere in the bill. I don't want to jump way ahead, but that's our concern.
You're looking for the department to come up with their own exemption?
Well, I'm just curious. I know how.
Can you give us examples of where you think we should do that?
Well, I think it's in what portion of the rule? Or from I'll be selfish in our critical infrastructure, right?
Right.
From the generation side, but also our distribution and transmission side of things. So our substations, our switching stations, we also have our gas stations around our facilities. So from the gas and electric side, we have concerns with obviously access. And also a couple other things too that come to mind. Remediation, sometimes remediation on-site, or sometimes we're off-site doing remediation where we're impacting real estate. And we would like some provisions in there to exempt those temporary types of projects that may require permits. And the other question that comes up as I read through this was adjacent properties to these facilities, where access may be looked at relative to that facility adjacent to critical infrastructure. How is that going to be reviewed for that one-off where you have an adjacent property owner that may be required to provide access that's now adjacent to critical infrastructure?
Well, we don't know when application comes in, we're not going to know right off the top that we're next to your critical infrastructure that requires. You will be, as an adjacent property owner, notified that an application was filed. So let's play that out for just a second. Let's explore that. So you would be notified, and then you'd say, you don't want the public to come on, to be attracted to that property because it could increase our risk to our site. Say it's a refinery or, if you said, a pretty critical substation or remediation site. What would you want to see happen? So that site itself that's adjacent to it has no limitations associated with it. What would you be looking for out of the rule for us to navigate to your ideal?
I'm not sure, to be honest with you, off the top of my head. But it was just a thought that came through. Read through the bill. I don't know the response to that. It may take some thought to look at it, but I don't want to impact also the development that's taking place.
That gets at what I heard someone, either I don't know which side of the table, had said something about critical infrastructure. We don't want a kayak launched by the Salem nuclear power plant.
Can I just chime in on that part? Yeah, the existing rules, I think, have a more general definition, I think, about safety, where it's safe to go or not go.
Yeah, right.
Section 3, dealing with the Homeland Security and all those facilities, is a prohibition on DEP not to require access on these types of facilities. It's not a limitation on your ability to not provide it, you know, elsewhere. So I think DEP absolutely has to take into account whether or not it's safe to cross those lines, that road or whatever. You do not want to be put in the position where you're putting the public, you know, in jeopardy by mandating access. So you should be maintaining that public safety type of exclusion in your regulations. It's the same on the adjacent property aspect. I would not put the burden on the adjacent property to know that person's permit application that he may be notified on to do an expansion of his building may result in the public having access. You had a similar, DP had a similar situation with, that was the name of the golf course was, would be on golf course right next to the IMTT facility where the department was going to propose, a walkway around it. I don't believe IMTT was ever aware or knew or objected, but, when the department looked at that situation, you made the wise decision not to require public access within 50 feet of these use tags. So you have access to Google Maps and everything. You know what's there, and it may take a little bit longer, to analyze, look at it, and to make the right decision. But public safety, even if it's not specifically excluded, must be part of your exemption process.
Ginger? So Mr. Dalton was saying before, for like homeowner permits, that it may be okay to have some type of fee, put in a fee like the Shellfish Mitigation Fund. So what about some of these facilities are expanding but are under Homeland Security? Wouldn't it make sense to have those facilities kick into a fund instead of having the access on their properties? Could that be a possibility?
Well, right now we're listening to that. That was one of the questions that I posed out there. What are their thoughts on that? They believe that the senator says that when they're doing work on their properties, that there was no requirement for them to go off site.
Okay, so you would be adverse to some type of fee kicking in some money to it?
This is not a time for me to say what I want.
No, I'm not talking to the regulated community now. Whether that would be acceptable. Some type of fee. What do you think, Ray?
I'm not sure if the legislature, even though it well may make sense, I'm not sure if the legislature gave EP that power or not. And again, I was not part of those stakeholder meetings, but I did remember hearing the senator say somewhere else that the hard stuff, such, would be dealt with later. So I would argue if you have the flexibility not to require offsite access where it's going to be prohibited, that unless you're mandated by the public trust, document to do it, and that's going to be limited, that you not deal with it now, that you wait for the future to do it.
You were going to say something.
I was just going to mention, somebody mentioned the kayak launch or canoe launch, and that our view is that the public access here pertains to land-based public access. Water surface is under the Coast Guard jurisdiction. And as an example, off the nuclear facility, there's a 100-yard safety zone set back from the Statue of Liberty. There's, the west channel of the East River is shut when the UN is in General Assembly. You can't approach within 100 yards of the abutments of any bridge. So Coast Guard has extensive safety zones that would take care of the on-water portion, as well as with our marine facilities. We have a 100-yard setback that people can't come into. It's a Coast Guard safety zone. But that's water. That's not this. Our understanding of this is the land-based public access. Mm-hmm. Coast Guard governs the safety zones that could preclude access from the water side.
So what governs public access of a bridge that is over the water? So the decision, which I thought as a user, when you think about like the new bridge they built on the northern portion of Ocean City, New Jersey.
That's the best public access.
So, right? But DOT didn't do that to be nice, or did they? Or were they required to?
DOT did it in cooperation with DEP, and our regulations looked at, ensuring that there was a public access associated with it, and DOT did a terrific job.
I think so too.
Designing a spectacular public access amenity along with a great highway.
So it comes with the cost, right? So I'm glad they paid that price as a resident of the state, right? But what if they come to you and say, we're pretty short on funds. We have $500 million to build this bad boy, and it's going to cost another $50 million to do this public access. Would DEP have had the authority to withhold their permit to construct that if they didn't put that pedestrian access and fishing pier and all those things that we do generally think is a good idea? But I mean, I guess, and maybe a more direct question is, does anything in this law change that paradigm from where you were then to where you are now?
Not when it comes to bridges. At least it doesn't appear to be anything in there that prevents us from requesting public access be addressed at a particular bridge location,
right,
especially if it's a common area for fishermen to fish, and if pedestrians have to get from one side to the other, that there be safe,
right,
passage of those pedestrians. I'm going to start to, some of this is probably not going to pertain to some of you, some of it isn't. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the permit by rules, general permits by cert, and general permits, keeping in mind we have our flood hazard regulations are in play here as well. I know a lot of people take advantage of the PBRs under flood hazard. Not too many facilities are going to just be flood hazard regulated. You'll likely need a CAFRA permit or an upland waterfront, but many people avail themselves to doing the work below ground under the PBRs. So are there certain ones that you are concerned about? We envision that if it doesn't, if it requires a public access examination, an individualized public access examination, as opposed to you must provide it, I don't know, the definitive, it won't qualify for that permit by rule anymore, and we'll likely have to shift some of our permit by rules into the general permit by cert or general permit category or individual category potentially. So this is a pretty big examination that we're going to need to do on all those. So anybody have any particular permits that you use on a regular basis under the coastal program or flood hazard program that falls into a category that you think shouldn't require an additional examination of public access beyond the access you currently have at a facility?
I'm not sure of specifics, Ginger, but I'm sure there are permits that, get utilized regularly in the context of what I was starting to think of when we were going around the table, you know, redevelopment sites.
Exactly.
And particularly redevelopment sites where you have an existing building and you may be changing the use, you may be remediating and changing the use from old industrial to residential, but you're not changing the footprint of the building. And you may, in that process, be utilizing certain permits by rule, permits by cert, whatever. I don't think the law, I think the law, when they talked about change in use, contemplated, you know, a vacant parcel and putting up a new obstruction to public access. I don't think it intended to mean that, okay, we have, you know, the four corners of a building. It was a warehouse or manufacturing facility. Now it's going to be residential. And that's a change in use that should trigger public access. So I think that should, going back to, I know this is a little off topic of your question, but going back to the question about exemptions, I think that type of change in use should be exempt. And permits by rule or other permits by cert that go along with that type of hypothetical.
And Ginger, I'll agree definitely on the issue of redevelopment and maintenance, as was mentioned before. But again, and I was just, I don't have the flood hazard list with me, I was just looking over the coastal ones. I'll just, you know, maybe still at a higher level, even though some of these do require public access, as a practical matter, public access was never required because of the other exemptions in the existing rules, because it didn't apply to, you know, very good, smaller expansions or you know, minor changes in use. Again, these
for
are
many,
all these all minor activities, and I don't think it was ever the legislature intent. Definitely not the intent of the public trust doctrine. When you're doing these minor type of activities, you know, revetments, bulkheads, you know, reconstruction of existing bulkhead, you know, theoretically under existing rules require the access rule to be implemented. However, as a practical matter, it doesn't, because you're not really, you know, it's exempt, you know, otherwise. I don't think any of these, again, with a few exceptions of maybe beach and dune maintenance, maybe the tourism one, again, you can take a hard look and see if there's anything that really changed the use, but I don't think the public trust doctrine, which this law is trying to implement, ever envisioned that these types of activities would you know, trigger an analysis much, or that anyone even kick into a fee or anything else. That you know, that was not the intent of what was this law was trying to do, and I don't think it's requiring you to do that. And you have program integrity and a whole regulated community that requires, you know, very quick turnarounds, you know, on these permits without much, interference. We've just been asked by other aspects of the administration, how can, you know, the business community help us do things simpler? I don't think it's anyone's intent to try to make it simple complicated.
So if we had a work group just take a look at all these general permits, PBRs, like perhaps put together a spreadsheet where we look at them and then make a decision on whether we feel public access should be required or not as pertaining to legislation, maybe we'll send out an email to that effect, and if you want to be on that work group, great. Happy to have your participation. We will send that out also to, after we meet with all the other groups, maybe not to the level of the municipalities because that meeting's so much later, but to like the environmental community, DOT.
That type of work group would be good to have everyone in the room together.
Everyone in the room
together.
Because
if someone objects to it, you know, exactly. Let's talk it out.
Yes. Because I'm already sensing your strong feelings on what you're saying. That is coming from your perspective, but others have a different position.
I understand. And I was only involved in this process the last several months, so, mm-hmm. you know, I've got... wasn't part of the stakeholders, but again, we have legislation that ended up. Mm-hmm. But in some of those last meetings, when I would raise some of these smaller issues, you know, the Tim Dunghams would get up there and says, no, that's not what the law is meant to do. It's not going to require access over single payrolls, you know, homeowners. It's not going to require access when you put a bulkhead in the back. So, you know, go listen to the tapes. So, you know, I don't think it was really anyone, even those people who are advocating for strong public access rules, that were not advocating for this.
I think a work group.
Good idea.
I think then we can maybe
sort
through
you,
it here.
You have 18 months. Until
no, we don't have 18 months. We have a couple months. That's all we really have. We have 18 months to adopt.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
A good chunk of that time is from proposal to adopt. So we only have a...
What? On our, level up.
Why does it take
oh,
so
that
long?
Was back then.
Yeah, so we are actively thinking of ideas. We've heard some of them today. So we're hopeful that maybe some of this we're hitting right, you know. So, but we really want to hear what other people's perspectives are to make sure we're really clear that, you know, we go out with a rule proposal that says off-site public access required for the things that were considered exclusions. We're going to hear back that was not the intent of the senator, right? Mm-hmm.
What do we think was the intent?
And he has said, he has verbalized to us that he's hopeful that the department will be reasonable in their application. So.
What does that mean?
We will sort through what that means as through these conversations, right? And I think really hearing what each other has to say is a big part of this understanding. I was going to, you know, before we leave, I also want to delve into a couple other issues that I remember hearing before in our previous public hearings on this topic. I want to know what the position is. Like, for example, one of the things I remember hearing in that long journey of rule proposals that we went on starting in 2010 in response to the Avalon decision was every time building and industry came in for a permit to the department, we took another bite at the apple, and we made you, even though you had existing public access, you had provided it, we say, we want more, we want more, we want more. And you want to talk a little bit about that from your different perspectives? I think what I heard was, so far, is if we're staying within our footprint, we're not really changing what we're doing on the site. We're putting in new equipment, maybe retrofitting a building to house something else, remediation on the site, replacing a bulkhead, doing repairs, that, and you don't fall under that exemption, rather, or, right, criteria in the law, you wouldn't want us to do another bite at examining additional public access that might be needed at that site if you had already done some kind of examination and required public access. Is that accurate? See anything different?
Yes.
I want to make sure I understand your perspective. I'm not saying we're going to go that way, but just want to understand your perspective. Right? Is there other things that fall into that category? I thought Dan had some points that I hadn't thought of, or we hadn't thought of looking at it, which is, it's just not safe, right?
Well, the drinking water.
It's CSOs, and not safe, but the CSO and the project itself is limited in funding. And
right, so you know, you've got municipal utilities sponsoring these projects that require the DEP permits. Mm-hmm. You're basically, you've got ratepayer funds that are limited in pretty challenged communities, trying to do a good environmental thing that we're required to already under a federal or state mandate. And unless there's a trail that ends here and it starts here, and then little pieces in the middle, it's hard for me to see that there's a real public purpose of requiring public access where that permit would be issued.
Mm-hmm. What if it were in those sort of situations, something along the lines of maybe that's a fund issue. You know, what if the state did establish a fund?
Sure.
And, you know, I always heard clear, predictable outs. Is that something?
I think so. I mean, that, you know, that all these communities are going to have these long-term control plans and green infrastructure and public land is going to be part of some stormwater retention and public access, all the great stuff that's happening on the waterfront. And Camden now is kind of an early example of that work.
Mm-hmm.
So there's something there, I think. I don't have any details around it, but I think there's something there.
Mm-hmm. I think from a fee standpoint, though, a lot of it's just going to get pushed back to either the ratepayer or the county, local, or state taxpayer. Yeah. So by requesting a fund that pays into it, I think ultimately, you know, everybody's going, it's going to hit everybody's pocket in one way or another. A lot of the projects we do are capital. From a BPU standpoint, there, you know, a lot of that is reimbursed to the utility and burden the taxpayer.
Ginger, while intellectually, again, in the previous lives, I thought the fee concept would make sense if you had the right formula. I'm not sure if under this legislation and prior court decisions whether or not you have the authority to require a fee. If you don't have the authority to require a fee, and some of those fees, but you know, mm-hmm. argue it's too much or too little, but if you don't have that requirement, I would then fall back on what others have said about not dealing with offsite access now, because it's a complicated issue, and if you go back to the 07 rules, whatever year they were, you had a requirement to provide offsite access. And that requirement, you know, again, as everyone knows, finding a project is extremely difficult. It's time consuming. It's uncertain as to whether or not it's good or not. That's one of the complexities, I think, that the senator was trying to avoid for somewhere else. The alternative to that the department had done was go kind of check to a local town, to find a town. There were no standards, and it was, quite frankly, it was extortion from a lot of towns who were saying, you want to put a bulkhead in, give me a $70,000 check. And again, while that sounds crazy, that's what was actually happening. DEP was forcing these exorbitant checks to be written to towns who had no way or purpose or dedication of that money in exchange to be able to put a needed bulkhead to, you know, keep their properties safe. These are complicated issues. The senator said, you have phase one, the easy stuff, stay easy. You know, the offsite issues, he said he's gonna come back at some point in time. Wait, he didn't mandate that you require offsite access. Don't try and handle it here. I'm not sure if you have the legal or the policy bandwidth to deal with it right now. It's gonna make things worse. Do what you need to do, but don't do what you don't need to do.
And Ginger, just to add to that, from my assessment, I think why that issue of putting that aside on, you know, providing access somewhere else was, you know, we have difficult fiscal times right now with the budget, and I think the chairman, along with a number of legislators, were concerned that are we asking, you know, folks to once again, you know, pay for, because ultimately it always comes down to who pays.
Yeah.
And, you know, isn't that always a debate on any policy issue that we work on? So I think that was part of the drive because of the challenges that they all have, all 120 legislators trying to do the budget every year. And this was my, like, 25th budget that I was, you know, been working on. And anytime I ever testified on a legislative issue, whether it was environmental, energy, economic development, healthcare, it always comes down to who pays. And I think at that time, because of the challenges that the legislature had and continues to have, you know, they felt that that was going to be a debate between, if you can't provide it here, you must provide it over here, and by the way, you're responsible for it and you're paying for it. So I think Ray's right. I think there was an understanding that that's going to be a debate, probably more than a discussion and dialogue, but that's why the senator decided, all right, you all can't agree to, you know, on this, let's push it off and we'll revisit again. I don't know what his timeline is to do another public access bill. I know he was, you know, we did it, you know, we'll revisit it someday, he said. He's got other pressing issues that he's working on right now, like recycling and plastic bags and so on and so forth. So I don't know what his timeline is, but I just wanted to reaffirm what Ray said, that I think a lot of it had to do with costs and who ultimately pays for it. So.
And just to piggyback off of that, I just want to clarify that at least what I think I'm hearing is that this discussion is in the context of business and industry and not in the context of residential development, commercial development, where your rules already have provisions in them that have been in place to allow for public access to be addressed off-site. And those rules, again, were implemented consistent with the public trust doctrine 2 years ago, pursuant to legislative action. So from the Builders Association perspective, we would not want to see the department depart from that and remove off-site options for public access in the residential and commercial context, because oftentimes you cannot satisfy public access meaningfully or reasonably on-site. And so that offsite option is an effective tool to deal with the issue. I think it's a different issue for the types of uses.
But, you also said it's not as easy if you can't do it here, you can't readily.
It's not always easy, but at least it's
to go somewhere else.
It's
right?
An option.
I think when we had the discussion and we had the amendment that included the critical infrastructure, homeland security facilities, you know, there was an understanding that, yep, that's logical, we need to protect them. The discussion, again, debate in a future piece of legislation was always understood from my engagement of it as a co-chair involved with the various stakeholder meetings that we had, that would be addressed down the road, because there was no consensus. Because if a PSE&G can't provide it down in Salem by the nuclear power plant, all right, PSE&G, where are you going to make accommodations in Salem County. So there, that was even a bigger discussion. So I think that's why the chairman decided, okay, we'll protect those facilities, but we are going to revisit that in another bill at some point. And again, I don't know what at some point is in the timeline of the chairman.
What if your commercial development that was being proposed, was like a restaurant or something, would there be, and I think we, if we did a statewide examination of public access, we probably would find that bathrooms and parking are a limiting factor for families going to the beach for a day trip. What if there was, if you were doing a restaurant, a requirement to allow the public to use your...
You better talk to the Restaurant Association about that.
It's not the responsibility of an individual business to provide public access for the community. If you want public access for the community, you know, you're in the department, you know, you have, you know, monies or Green Acres monies, you know, you have public access plan requirements with local municipality, you have a plan holistically. The burden should not be placed with any one individual business, you know, to do that, other than Starbucks. Starbucks, you know, you can do that.
And then what Dan brought up, what constitutes the restroom? Is it a Port John acceptable as opposed to building the whole, you know, gamut of, you know, restroom facilities and changing stations? Mm-hmm. And I know, and I don't want to talk for the League of Municipalities, but I know that was a big issue for them because ultimately the people that pay within their domain of the 565 municipalities are, you know, the property tax individuals that live in that area. And then, of course, you know, parking's always controversial. But in all the beaches that I visited, I don't think I've ever seen free parking. It's all meters and what have you. So I don't think that's palatable. So
it's probably like 20 or 30 blocks away.
Oh,
well, and you
know, we've all experienced it
in Ohio.
And then the lots, if you're going to get close to any of the beaches, anywhere you go, yeah, $25 to park here. You know, so it is what it is.
If parking and restrooms, you know, are an issue, again, it's largely a municipal issue. And when you hear the complaints, it's because certain towns may prohibit parking in certain areas, and that's, again, that's not a business issue. That's a municipal issue, and whether or not their ordinances, you know, are appropriate, you know, and maybe DP, you know, if we can, you know, do something, you know, about. Mm-hmm. Those, you know, limiting factors. As you know, up and down the coast, you know, most of the coast has good access, you know, sufficient parking for the demand. You know, there's been instances, you know, just because you put in parking or a restroom doesn't necessarily mean that the public really wants to go there. The public, you know, I was looking at pictures on the 4th of July. I don't think the public had any problem finding the beaches, you know, when they want to go there. So, you know, there's a difference between rhetoric and a difference between reality. So, you know, we should not be making public policy decisions based on rhetoric as opposed to what the public really needs, you know, in any particular parts of the state. By the way, the law does mention, and I think this is really the good phrases in here, it talks about... Where's the language? Now, of course, I can't find it. But maximize different experiences provided by the diversity of the state's tidal waters and adjacent shorelines. You don't get diversity by having seaside heights be, you know, everywhere. You get diversity by recognizing that there's certain areas where maybe there's going to be less people there. You know, and maybe, you know, certain areas where people want to go to. You don't need the whole state to be Seaside Heights to have a good experience. And I think the legislature recognizes that by its language of maximizing different experiences. sometimes you expect to hike a couple blocks to be in that sort of, you know, area. And no one has the expectation it's going to be a bathroom there.
All right, I'm
going to
get final thoughts. From PSC's perspective, any final concerns, thoughts, things you want us to take into consideration? Should I skip over you, Ray?
No, just don't mess it up.
Just don't mess it up. Don't mess it up. Okay.
And just one request before I know you're going to meet all the groups individually and then please put us all together first so we could debate ideas, you know, in a group setting as opposed to and not be surprised.
So we are definitely going to do a work group on the permit by rules, general permits by cert. as we think of other work groups, we'll email you out. Okay. Email it out to everyone based on the conversations that we have. But I understand that this is a definitely a role we lived for several years, and it was a journey. Sure. Melissa. No deed restriction, go ahead.
I was involved in all the task force meetings as well, and I can reiterate that, you know, I think it's important we all are in the same room again together, because I think it will bring to light the issues that we did not have consensus on. I mean, there were clear items I don't think we will ever all have consensus on. And I think this was Senator Smith's attempt to make the easy vote. I don't think this is the easy vote.
He's actually gotten into a trend of doing public policy issues like that now.
Right.
He
come together and figure it all out. Well,
says, work on it for 3 months, give me a report. I know you're going to have one with consensus items, hopefully, and others that'll be in disagreement. So we were the trial run.
Right.
Public
so I just wanted to say that, you know, obviously, you know, for our industry and my members, you know, our goal is to sort of protect them and their businesses. You know, we've always felt from the very, very beginning that marinas already provide meaningful access. You know, not only do we give them the opportunity to get to the water, but we get them on the water. And that was one of the biggest challenges that we were just kind of like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they're coming after us so hard when we provide fun and recreation. So, you know, I always want that to stay top of mind when we talk about these things. I've seen the various versions of the bill, but I mean, the regulation, been involved in all of it. I would say it would be great if we could all just get out of these rooms and look at the whole entire state and really focus on ways to provide more meaningful access, even the kinds of access that our marinas provide versus. I don't think there'll be any kind of policy legislation that's going to satisfy everybody. But so I'll reiterate, Ray. And you know, again, thanks for, you know, we appreciate the support for our industry because again, you know,
provide access
and getting rid of that deconstruction. Put that on record.
I don't have anything else to add other than I agree with what Mike said about how things went as far as, you know, the off-site access, the on-site access. I believe, if I remember correctly, the critical infrastructure piece was probably the most, that garnered the most attention in this process. So it's something that's obviously a big concern to a lot of industries.
I think conceptually, too, Ginger, a lot of us around here, we believe in the concept of, you know, public access, and that was something, again, in my task as one of the co-chairs, you know, to strive for. You know, we prioritize. That's why the critical infrastructure component was, you know, important to us in this iteration of legislation. One thing I found interesting in our stakeholder meetings is the diversity of the state. I mean, you know, Hudson County, the woman, I forget her name, who was there, it was very passionate about fixing, right, Ray, the river walkways, you know, so different than once you get down to Salem and Cumberland County, down in that neck, you know. So, you know, obviously it's not probably going to be a one-size-fits-all situation, and I think it's, you know, and then, of course, you know, not to pick on the league, but you have home rule and different municipalities treat this issue differently, as we've seen over the years, both in the press and such. But I think I can speak for the stakeholders that are here today. We believe in the concept of it. We want to do it the right way. We want to be helpful. And I think the chairman understood that, you know, that's what at least my mandate was as one of the co-chairs. So we want to continue to be helpful. Like I said, I have the final report that I submitted to the chairman. If you you know, require it to get some more background, I'd be happy to do so.
I think please email it. Jill,
yep.
You are our point of contact.
Sure.
Email it to
okay.
Jill.
Yep.
Yeah, I didn't participate in all the stakeholder meetings, but at most of them, and I agree with what's been said by most. And I will say that, you know, the chairs had a really difficult job of dealing with all the different interest groups and personalities and thoughts about what is a very sometimes emotional topic and people have very strong feelings about. And I think that's, you know, that effort I probably think there's a consensus that it wasn't a consensus bill, but it was the best that could be achieved. And from that perspective is why I view it as very limited in scope, and that was deliberate. I won't repeat what I had said earlier. You've got the tape. I just want to ask you a question. Is Mike, are you going to, or should I ask Ginger, are you going to be the DAG involved in the other stakeholder groups as well?
Yeah.
For consistency? Okay.
Nothing big to add, just to say I think the way you're approaching it is smart, and we appreciate being involved, and if there's ever a point where you want to do any field trips, we've got members that, you know, for example, we've got member Jay Fletcher Kramer on that did the bulkhead work in Monmouth Beach Seabright that included a lot of public access aspects, and we've got a multitude of folks that are doing work, active work, dredging, and you know, so if you ever wanted to get out and experience any of this firsthand, or you want to do some field trips, we can get a cooler, pack some beers, we can have some fun. But just whatever we can do to help bring some reality. I mean, to manage this issue from Trenton, when there's a feel to this, it's kind of hard. We are all Jersey residents. We all know what too far to walk to the beach feels like. But if there's ever a point where we can maybe go out and see some of these. You know, I when I was sitting in seats like you are, Ginger, you know, some of the tough permitting things I dealt with, I went down and I went to the PSE&G nuke plant, and I really didn't have a full perspective on the issue until I was actually kind of there and around it. So there may be a point in the years to come that if that's advantageous, we'd be happy to work with some of our members that are working on construction right now. Tom or the utilities, I'm sure, would be grateful to set that up as well.
We have nothing particular to add to what's already been stated, other than to say I was at most of the task force meetings. I can show you the scars if you'd like to see them. I think we really do have as close to a compromise bill as possible, and I think that the issue of offsite and a couple of other contentious issues were intentionally pushed off for further consideration and were not intended to be part of this original go. And with that, I think the way you're approaching this and start to kick the ball down the field a little bit, I think hopefully we don't have to endorse Ray's position that make sure you don't screw it up. I think you're on the right path to getting it moving the right way.
Just ditto. Thank you very much for seeking our input.
We appreciate everyone coming here.
Yeah, thank you. And from the utility perspective, you know, I think our focus is fairly narrow. I don't disagree with anything that's been said. But on the what I assume would be the rare occasion where one of our projects might trigger a public access review, just considering that we are a little bit unique with respect to other industries and that we have an obligation, statutory obligation to serve. Our customers in a way that's safe and reliable and at reasonable cost. So just taking that into account.
Okay. Well, I want to thank everybody for coming here today. On the last day of the heat wave, I appreciate enduring it, putting in your vehicles and coming here to Trenton. We are going to talk about, or internally, be brief. We all took notes to make sure we understood your perspective. we will definitely have a work group. We will email that out to everyone. If you want to be on the work group, that means that you actually need to come to a work group meeting and participate. We demand that out of you, or we kick you off our work group. But we really use those work groups. They've been very helpful in helping craft language when we come down to the nuts and bolts of what we're going to say. So we appreciate everyone's help in making sure that we write a rule that is reflective of your particular positions. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thanks.